Okay. So we were discussing the eight components of a proper meditation posture, which are called the namnang chuge. Say namnang chuge. The 8-point posture of Vairochana, right? One of the Buddhas. And we were discussing the benefit of two different kinds of grass put under your meditation cushion, which were kusha and durwa. We finished the discussion about durwa, and now we're on to kusha. And he, Prabhupada Rinpoche, who is the teacher of the current Dalai Lama, right? And he was my teacher's teacher. He quotes the first line of a verse about kusha grass. Where do you get kusha grass nowadays? In the Indian grocery store. Okay? Ask for a broom. They'll give you one. Then you've got to take it apart. It takes some skill. He quotes the first line of a verse about kusha grass. And I want to give you the whole thing. You'll also see this kind of verse in the fire offerings. We're going to be doing a fire offerings, two fire offerings at the summer retreat in Prescott in August. And we'll be using kusha grass there. You'll see how it's used in a fire offering. Those fire offerings, I mean, Rinpoche trained me in those for 25 years. And it's a good transmission. We do it the ancient way. The custom is 5,000 years old. It comes from Vedic times, Homa. And you can participate in the fire offering. I think it's very, very beautiful. And it's exciting to become part of that lineage, okay? So we'll do it together. Rebecca said I'm supposed to pitch the retreat also. Work study applications are due tonight. So if you are broke and you want to come to the retreat, you have to put in the work study by tonight. It's online, am I correct? At acifoenix.org. It's on this card that you can pick up outside. Okay, but please don't ask at the last minute. It really, really messes up everything. Okay, we need to know how many people need help. And when you ask at the last minute, it screws up all our plans. It messes up everything. Okay, so please just be considerate. And if you need help, if you can't come, there's no charge for the retreat itself, and there's no charge for these classes. It's just that we have to pay for your room. And we have to pay for your food to the camp. It's like a Boy Scout camp or something. Very luxurious. And by the way, if anyone can come up with a better camp, okay, you heard me say it tonight. If you can find a better camp, then do it. And stop whining about it, okay? It has to be within about an hour of Camp Verde, Arizona, or an hour and a half, okay? But please don't rag on Rebecca and everybody about the camp, because every time we ask, nobody finds one. Nobody finds a better one, okay? The price ratio seems to be great. The pine trees are wonderful. Okay, so anyway, work-study applications are due tonight. There's an early bird thing if you get it in tonight also. It ends tonight, okay? It's not like we're trying to make more money out of the people who register later. We're just charging them more. So they will pay. They will pay for more work study people. Okay, so we're punishing you because we need to plan. We need to buy food. We need to tell the camp. The camp needs to know how many beds to get ready. And then everybody in this room is irresponsible this way, and you don't tell us till the night before, and then you come whining to Geshe Michael, and it's really inconvenient for me. And it's difficult for everybody, and you're not going to change, so why am I talking about it? Okay. So here's the whole verse about kusha. Kusha dini sangshin ge, sambai lanam takje yin, kunjo sumbo nye che pa, sale ke me daming yin, daki gegnam tamje ni, shidan tashi zedu su. This is the full verse, okay? I found it in one of the Panchen Lama's, the second Panchen Lama's, one of his works, okay? Which is possible only because of the Refugee Camp Computer Project, which is celebrating its 25th year this year. And you should appreciate it. You should tell Mark Tripedi and people like that, Ningbo, Jigme, Lama Ora, what a good job they're doing on that, okay? Sometimes you should call them and thank them. Everybody's working for free, mostly. Alice is also doing all the books. Where is she? Thankless job. Trying to juggle books where there's not enough money for the computers. Okay, anyway. Thank you for that. She does a great job. Okay, Kusha Dini Tsangchenge. Kusha grass represents cleanliness and goodness. Sangbei Lanam Dakcheyin. In the Brahma realms, the worldly god realms, they love it. They use it all the time. For cleaning things, for making things pure. Koinjo Sumbo Nyeche Pa. It's a way to please the three jewels. Sale Kepe Daminyin. It is the essence of all flowering things which grow from the earth. Daki Gegnam Tamte Neshi Dan Dashit Zeta Su. It stops all obstacles. And it brings all auspicious things. Okay, these are the selling points for Kusha grass according to the second Panchen Lama. Okay? Diptam Mitsangwa Selwe Zete. It is a. Now we're back to Pabongkwa Rinpoche, okay? It is. You can see in. No, you can't see. Okay. Diptam Mitsangwa Selwe Zete. It is a substance which cleans away spiritual obstacles and lack of cleanliness, lack of spiritual cleanness, like that. Gyagatu Acharya Namla Tipchungna. In the old days in India, if the Acharyas, meaning the Buddhist masters, had some kind of spiritual obstacle, Chungna, Kusha itself to Shakre Nyal to Drovatar, they would actually go sleep in a meadow of Kusha grass. Okay? They would go sleep in a meadow of Kusha grass. By the way, Geshe Lothar, I forgot to mention to the DMU board. Are you still here? Some of you are. Geshe Lothar expressed the opinion that we have a dip at Diamond Mountain, an obstacle, and that we should a spiritual obstacle, and that we should have the monks at Sarah do a nice puja. So maybe talk to Scott. Can I say that? If you're interested in helping with that. It's $3,000, okay? That's why I haven't mentioned it yet, because nobody has any money. But they give a little money to each monk. There's a couple thousand monks now at Sera. So they give them like 20 rupees, which is 75 cents. And then they give them all a big lunch. And I guess that makes their prayers better. And it's a big spiritual power. So if you're interested in helping with that, talk to Scott, okay? I think it's a nice idea. I think it's a sweet idea. The worst we can do is give some Tibetan hamburgers to the monks, okay? Shakra Dunyal Dro Dita Mitsawe Sawe Chin. Lu Duglu Gedam Shepe Tulu Geni. There's a famous Lamrim on which this text is based called Lamrim Marti. Say Lamrim. Marti. There are eight great Lamrims. Marti is one of them. Mar means red, crimson. Chi means instructions. And it means the instructions that a master physician gives to the medical students when they dissect a corpse. It's called the red instruction. Okay, and it came to be used for spiritual books when the Lama tears the subject apart. It's called a dissection text. Okay? So anyway, he's quoting from that book, if you care. Okay? Ningbo's, I think, the only one. That's where he happens to be quoting at this point, and nobody would know. So anyway, Shepe Dulukini, that book says the eight or. Okay? The eight or, dham, in the text up there, dham. And I'll talk about that later. It says the eight aspects of a good meditation posture, or. We got to talk about the or, okay? Shebe Dulugini, here's the eight. So here you get first question to homework three, which we're finally reaching. Yay! I know you were upset. Namnang Chud Dungi Tengdu. Actually, there's only 7 points to the meditation posture of Vairochana. Tengdu, but you add to it uk. What's uk? The breathing. How do you breathe as you're preparing to go into deep meditation? So there are 8 points of the physical posture. Sorry, 7. And then they count breath as number 8. So sometimes they count 8 and sometimes they count 7 because sometimes you do the breath separately. Okay? Today we had the breath meditation separately by Acharya Nick. Right? In the morning. Those of you who got up. Okay. Uk dungwa nembe geyin. Deni gyawa wensape. Now, there was a famous lama called Wensapa. He lived 1505 to 1566. Wensapa means the hermit, the guy who lives in the wilderness. Okay, he lived in the wilderness. And he's important in the Lamrim tradition. They don't say it here, but in general, in Tibet, if a student asks a lama, hey, did anybody actually get enlightened from doing all this stuff? They'll say, Wensapa did. You know, why and how, I haven't read the biography, but he's famous for being somebody who did it, okay? And he made a verse about the proper meditation posture. He put it into a poem. Ready? Here we go. Kangba lakpa kepa sum sochu chenam dombe shi gomik trakpa ugdan shi namba nangze chegeyin. Okay, he made a poem out of it. That says, by the way, you don't have to write it down yet. It says, legs, hands, back. 3 different ones. Then he said, teeth, lips, and tongue count as 1. Okay, how many we got so far? 4. Head, eyes, shoulders, and breath. We got 8. Those are the 8. We'll explain, okay? It's a long explanation. By the way, you'll never get such a good explanation. This is the source, okay? You'll never see a better explanation. That's true of a lot of things in this text. This is the greatest text on Lamrim. This is the best presentation of the steps to enlightenment, okay? And we will take another 10 or 12 years to finish it. And we will all be gray-haired, but we will still be surfing. Okay, all right. She sumbatar, kambani dorje kirtung. If you can do it, you can put the 2 feet into a full lotus posture, okay? In Tibetan and in Sanskrit, the lotus posture is not called the lotus posture. That's a different posture, okay? Just for your information, they call Dorje Kyutung. Say Dorje Kyutung. So it's the what posture? It's the diamond posture, okay? Diamond posture means a full lotus, okay? They don't call it full lotus. I don't know where full lotus came from, okay? It's called the diamond posture. Dila ngaki zorim gombe kap tabu matok semgil dang chekil tabu chok. But if you're practicing anything other than completion stage, okay? Completion stage is one of the 2 stages of secret practice, tantra. Okay, there are 2 stages of secret practice. Say, kirim, dzogrim. Once they asked me to translate for a lama from East Tibet, and he said, chidziri, chidziri. I'm like, I'm in front of all these people and I'm trying to translate. And he's like, we have to study chidziri. I'm like, what's chidziri means candy. What does dziri mean? He's like, no. Kirim and Zorim. They talk a lot like, and you can barely understand them, okay? So Kirim means, in Tantra, Kirim means the attempt to come into contact with divine beings, okay? Angels. The attempt to make actual contact with angels is the first half of Tantra. The second half is called Zorim. That's where they train you to become like them. Basically, okay, those are the 2 parts of secret practice, okay? So he's saying, if you're not doing Dzogrim, if you're not doing channel work, inner body work with chakras, you don't have to do a full lotus. Yay! Okay? Tabu matok. You can do a semkil, or you can do a chekil. It's okay. Tabu chok means, it's okay, okay? Semkil means a sembe kirtung. It means a bodhisattva leg posture, which is a half lotus, what we call a half lotus. One one foot up on top of the other thigh. Okay. In Tibetan Buddhism, that's usually the left foot up on the right thigh, and the other foot tucked under. Okay. In the yoga tradition of the Hindu yoga tradition in India, it's the right foot up. Like if you go to Dharma Mitra's class, right? He'll put the right foot up first, I think. Yeah. Okay. I don't think it... Well, maybe it does matter. Maybe you should do it according to your own lineage, right? Anyway, we're left footers. Okay? And anyone who uses the right foot is going to go to hell, probably. Okay. Semkyo. Then Chekyo means what they call Sukhasana in the yoga tradition. Today, John Salisbury, who gave a great class, kicked our rear ends. That's where just both ankles are on the floor and you're not trying to do any kind of a lotus or anything, okay? So that's called in Tibetan a half, that's called a half lotus, a half posture, okay? So far we have three options, right? Full lotus or half lotus or Sukhasana, okay? Which means easy pose, right? Okay. I always have to look them up because I get confused because of the lotus thing. And I look them up, and I thought you'd like to hear some comments on those postures, which will delay the homework further. Okay? I found some very interesting comments, and I like them, okay? I want you to hear them. Okay, here's one. This is from a commentary on Mahamudra, okay? I think it's probably Muchudara Bhadra. Anyway, Deyang Kamba Lakpa Kepa Sum Sochu Chenam Dombe Shi Gome Trapa Ugdan Shi Namba Nangze Chige Yenshe Kamba. He quotes the same text about the eight. He quotes the same text that I just quoted you. Then he says, Kamba Dorje Kirtun Tomar Tendel Ki Ke Chewe Kang Tub Tsam. It's good luck if you try to do a full lotus when you start your meditation session, okay? But you can feel he's going to say something, right? He says, it's good luck. Try as hard as you can to get your feet into a full lotus for the first couple minutes because it'll be auspicious for later. Tendel means auspicious. Lumi dewa kena, when you start to get serious pain. Okay? So in the 16th century, it was an issue also, okay? You're not special, and Tibetans also get pain in their knees, okay? Numi kina, mikpala nöpe. This is crucial, okay? Listen to this. He says, if you force a lotus posture too long, your knees will hurt, and you'll lose your meditation object. Because you'll start thinking about your knees, which are not your meditation object, okay? You're supposed to be meditating on your teacher or on impermanence or something, and if your body hurts, you have thwarted your meditation. You see what I mean? So park the body in a comfortable position, okay? He says, don't keep the full lotus. When it starts to hurt, break it, okay? How you do that without moving, I'm not sure. Okay. Nepe kangsam ne kangba yuma oktupap. Then you could pull the left knee, left foot thigh calf down, and you could put the right one on top of the left one. Okay? So he's doing the opposite. That's called Sembe Kirtrum. In the Tibetan tradition, that's called a bodhisattva leg posture. Okay? Like, you would call it a half lotus. They call it a bodhisattva posture. Deyang matubna kirtung tamel pa jao. If you can't manage a half lotus, then just plop your both ankles down and leave it at that, okay? I like that. That's a real ancient scripture that says, if your knees start hurting, for God's sake, break the pose. And because it's going to distract your meditation, okay? So that could lead to a whole bunch of thinking, like it's okay to sit on a chair. Okay? All right? The point is, get your body parked so the mind can leave. If the parked car starts going beep, 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 then you have to run out of the building and, you know, right? Turn off the car alarm. It's exactly the same thing, okay? Leave it. park, then go do your stuff. Okay. All right. Lakpanin Nyamshaki Chakya. He finished talking about the legs. So now we're on to the second of the 8 points. Okay. Which are the hands? Put them in meditation posture. What's that? The left hand, the left palm down, face up first, and then the right palm on top of it. So that's traditional Buddhist, Tibetan tradition. Left hand goes down first on your lap, right hand goes down next. You might find that you have less lap than other people. Okay? And it starts to go like this. So some people try, they carry a little piece of cloth around with them, like a kitchen towel or something, and they fold it up and they put it on their hands. That forces their hands up a bit, and that brings their shoulders back, and they can meditate longer. Okay, so check where your hands come on your feet. If you're doing a full lotus, your hands will be up higher and your back will be straighter. If you're doing easy pose, the hands might be too low, and you'll find yourself getting, what do you call it? Stooping. So if you find that, you could put something under your hands, okay? A real meditator should have at least 3 pieces of equipment with them. A small cushion, like what do you call that stuff? Buckwheat. You got them, Kathy? Let's do that thing now. You got a bunch of them? No, okay. We brought a bunch of cushions for you. And you can try them, okay, in the break. You can come over and see which one your bottom likes the best, all right? This is a buckwheat cushion, which is, to me, a little over full. It will stay up kind of high, but some people prefer it. There's a zipper in here somewhere, hidden, and you can take out buckwheat and experiment with less buckwheat, and then your butt will form into it. I like the buckwheat ones because they form to your bottom. Okay, you got more? Can I push up some more? This one's nice. This is also a buckwheat version. I find it gives my knees more support. If your knees won't come down to the ground, this kind of crescent-shaped one is good. And you can adjust the buckwheat. You can take it out or you can add more buckwheat. So you might find that you can try these during the break. You should, okay? It makes a huge difference in your meditation if you find the cushion that's right for you. And everybody's different, okay? You got another one? Let's see. This is some Japanese thing, right? What's that called? Some guang... What's the name in Japan? I don't know. Is there a special name for this kind? No. Not in Tokyo. Anyway, it's not a buko or something? I don't know. Huh? Zap? Yeah, something like that. Zapophone? I don't know. It sounds like an aspirin substitute. But these are a little more firm, and you might find that you really like it. The thing is, some people get a cushion, they use it for 5 years, then they sit on their friends and they realize they used the wrong one for 5 years. Don't be like that. Like, experiment. Be like Gandhi, right? Experiment. Try different ones. This also has a nice handle to it, but it's a hassle to travel with. Okay. And some people I know use a little wooden support, you know, an angled piece of wood. I know people who use a 2x4, some people use a 4x4. You see what you like. I prefer nothing sometimes. Once you're meditating for many years, you don't need a cushion, okay? But that's another story. All right, here we go. Nyamchaki chakya, yevitengu. Tebong ni tse jar. Join the tips of the thumbs, okay, like that. I already mentioned it, but you might want to keep your fingernails short on the right hand. It digs into the left palm, and it can distract you. You see? So cut these short, okay, on the right hand. And then, I tried for years to make the thumbs stand up because I saw everybody doing that. I found that if I move my elbows forward, they stay up. But it's really distracting. Then after about 10 years, I just did it like this, okay? I just let the thumbs flop down. Pranically, it's important that they touch or almost touch. There's a circuit that's closed in your body, and it will help you meditate. Okay, so touch them slightly or lightly. Okay, but don't like get anal about them standing up, because then you'll stop thinking about your meditation object. Because when you stop thinking about them, they flop down. Okay, you can't have any muscle, right? Tensed muscles. Everything has to be loose. Okay. There's a thing in Tibet that it's auspicious if it's at the level of your navel chakra. Where is your navel chakra? Be careful. It's in the back, right? Behind the navel. In the monastery, you get whipped with a rosary if you point to your navel. Okay. Navel chakra is in the back, in the central channel, right? At the level of the... Navel just means at the level of the navel. Heart chakra means at the level of the heart. Throat chakra means at the level of the throat, but not in the throat or the heart or the... in the back, along the spine, okay? So it's supposed to be good luck for tummo, for developing inner heat, if you keep the thumbs joined down around the area of the navel. You can experiment. Different people's belly buttons were made differently. So don't get all frustrated if your thumbs don't meet your belly button or, you know... Your mom did that, so blame her. But just let it go, okay? People are so funny, you know? They're like, my belly button's in the wrong place, Geshe-la. Can I still get enlightened? You know? Okay. Kepa Trambo Sangma. Now the next is the what? What's the next subject? The back, okay? The spine, okay? Kepa Trambo Sangma. When we say that you should straighten the spine... Gelsignam, the vertebrae, should be Dongtse Tsepa Tekar. Dongtse means any kind of coin. It can be a bronze coin or a gold coin. But your vertebrae should stack up like coins, like a stack of coins. They should be aligned on top of each other. By the way, technically they don't align. There's a curve. There are two or three curves in your back, natural curves in your back. But it feels aligned. It should feel aligned. It's a kinesthetic misapprehension. Okay? They say in ballet, it feels like they're stacked. And that's how it should feel. They're not really. Okay. Sese Patekar Omwarja. Lu Changnat Sa Drongshing. This is beautiful. If your spine and if your torso is straight, your channels are straight. Okay? De la Gyue Lung Chong. And if the channels are straight, then the prana flows straight. Okay? He makes a big deal about it. Okay? Your spine should be straight, because when the spine is straight, the channels are straight. When the channels are straight, the prana flows properly. Okay? And Te, and because of that, Sem Le Su Rumor Tsung. Your mind will change. Your mind will become more suited for meditation. Your mind will become more meditative if the prana is moving well, which will happen if the channels are straight, which will happen if the vertebrae are straight. Okay, so this is sort of an onion thing. Have you ever heard about that? Ningbo taught it this morning in the meditation class, okay? Buddhas are always doing that. They're setting you up for the talk tonight. Okay? So this is the onion thing. If you ever wanted to know where it comes from, this is one of the sources. Okay? Listen. So we finished that one. We're on to all the stuff to do with your mouth. Teeth, lips, and tongue. Count it as one. So chu chet the tsumba dangba member. Rang Babsu Shat. This is cool. With regard to your lips, your teeth, and your tongue, don't force them into anything. Let them fall as they fall. Okay? Let them fall. Everyone's different. I have slightly bucked teeth that my mom gave me. Okay? And it's more convenient for me. When I'm concentrating, my mouth is slightly cracked open. you might be different, okay? You might have different teeth. Everybody has different teeth, okay? But the meditation instruction is, let it go the way it goes and don't force it. Don't force it to be more open and don't force it to be more closed than it does naturally. Leave it natural for you. For some people, that means closed. For some people, that means open. So for some people, for me, it means slightly cracked open, like that. But they say never breathe through your mouth unless your nose is stuffed up or you will suffocate. Okay? So in general, you don't breathe through your mouth. But if your nose is stuffed up, you can breathe through your mouth. Okay? But in general, you should try to breathe through your nose when you meditate. Dangpa Mimpa, Rang Bap Su Shak. Rang Bap Su Shak means let them do what they do. What? The mouth? Okay? Chetse Yaken La Jana. If you touch your upper palate of your mouth, right behind the teeth, with your tongue, lightly, like the teeth are kind of half open, and if you slightly curl your tongue back and set it on the upper palate, the tradition says you won't get thirsty and you will swallow less. Okay? I haven't been able to confirm that 100%, but you see, okay? I've done it my whole life, but I don't know. The point is, if you swallow in a deep meditation session, it will break you out of your concentration. It will sound like a truck passing by, okay? As you get more subtle in your meditation, to swallow is a disaster, okay? So you hold your tongue slightly touching the upper palate behind the teeth, the front teeth, and that's supposed to keep you from swallowing, okay? Helps keep you from swallowing. Kenla jana kami komba dang nyamshak. Tupakup, when you are very deep in meditation, if you hold your tongue like this, you won't drool. Okay? I tend to do that when I play music. If I play a raga for like a half hour, then I start drooling because the mind just goes into the music. You know what I mean? So be... Or when you're watching a really good movie, sometimes you drool. Or you're kissing some boy, you'll drool. Or I know, there are times in your concentration where you start to drool. That's a good sign. But if you hold your tongue up to the top, it won't drool so much. Okay. Neya, crucial point. So he finished the mouth. Now he's moving on to the head, position of the head. Okay. Go dume odu nunsam chungse guk. He says, slightly, the chin is slightly down, like not like this, but he says not totally parallel. Parallel, a chin which is parallel to the ground would bring your head up a little too high, and they say that causes distraction. Okay, if you meditate like this, then you will tend to get distracted. If you let the head fall all the way down, you will tend to get sleepy. So there's a tradition in Tibet that you kind of move the top of the neck back and you're like, you know, okay? Very slightly down, okay? Now there's an important thing in the text. It says, say meek. Meek.
Meek.
Everybody say meek.
Meek.
Good. Na.
Na.
Say.
Say.
La.
La.
Pop. So this is a meditation instruction which has been in the scriptures for 2,500 years, and it has caused endless cross-eyed people. Okay? It says, let the eyes drop towards the tip of the nose. Okay? And I'm always telling people that's not what it means. It just means, put your hands here at the tip of your nose, right? Then focus on your hands, okay? Focus your eyes on your hands. Focal point is on the hands. Now we move the hands. See? And you cannot see the details here, right? Because you're focusing at this focal distance, okay? That's supposed to be perfect. Okay? Put your hands on your nose. Look at your fingers. Focus on them. then drop the hands. And you are not staring at the nose, okay? That will make you cross-eyed, and it doesn't help. And many people read that in some book, and they're all going around like this, you know? It means focus the eyes loosely here, which means if there's letters down here, which, by the way, are very bad for meditation, if there are letters within sight, your eyes will automatically focus on that. So bring the focus out of focus so you can't read. You're focusing here, like this, okay? And you're not looking at your nose. It's just at this level. Got it? You got to teach people that. There's so many poor souls staring at the tip of their nose because somebody said that. Where are we? Papchepa. Na shok pensin tong sam kitsut chakra. That just means focus your eyes loosely in the area of your nose plane, the plane of your nose, okay? Plane, by the way, is shok. De la chingachut lai neya. If you learn to do that well, if you learn to focus your eyes loosely around here, on each side, right? Not here, but here. You won't get distraction and you won't get sleepiness. It will keep you between. Meditation is the exercise of not allowing the car to fall into the ditch on the left-hand side, which is called distraction, and not allowing the car to fall in the ditch on the right-hand side, which is dullness or sleepiness. Meditation is a constant balancing act. And a good meditator is like this. You know, when you first drive, okay, so I'm teaching this Tibetan kid to drive in India. Rinpoche told me to do it. We were driving from Sera to Debung, which takes about 16 hours or something, in an Indian car. And so he was driving, you know, and I said, and then I would say something, and he'd go, "What?" You know, he'd go, "What?" And then we'd go, "Ah!" Like off the road. Then I would pull the thing back. But a driver, after a year or something, after 6 months, you're like this, right? Watch your hands sometimes. They're going like this. And you're not even aware of it. It's just autonomic. Your hands are moving like this. A good meditator is doing the same between sleepiness and thinking of something else. Okay? Here's sleepiness. Here's thinking of somewhere else. And the meditation is going like this. And it's a constant correction act, okay? So he says, if you focus your eyes loosely around here, it'll be easier to keep the balance, okay? Meditation means keep a balance between those two things. Thinking about lunch and having eaten too much lunch, which makes you sleepy. They both relate to lunch, okay? Okay. Gashiki mikpa nam chela miktum ne dupatar detar mirungshing. This is a very subtle instruction, okay? He says some people, when they're doing a meditation session, they're done with all their preliminaries, then they close their eyes tight. And they build up a lot of pressure here, okay? Like a lot of muscular tension here in the eyelids. And that ruins their meditation, okay? Like there's a way to close your eyes and there's a way to close your eyes. Don't close them like that, okay? Because the tension will distract your mind, okay? The muscular tension in the muscular tension right here, look, at the ophthalmic fold or whatever it is. It has to be, this has to be totally loose, okay? Like totally relaxed, like that. Okay? And that's a good meditation. For most people, you should try closing your eyes halfway. Just let your eyelids relax. It's like you're drunk or something, okay? And it's not closed tight. It's like they don't fall down all the way. If you really relax the eyelids, they only fall down about 3/4 of the way or something. And that's a great option if you can do it. I'll give you a personal note, okay? This is my own thing that I learned over many years. It's almost more powerful to keep your head straight and You bring your eyes down to the nose level, and you let the eyelids do what they want. They're not going to be closed all the way, okay? And if you try doing that, if you try not closing your eyes all the way, which he recommends, but different people are different, right? You might have to close your eyes, or you get distracted. If you want to try the almost closed eyes thing, I suggest you have nothing in sight which can distract you. No bugs. The cloth on your altar, if you're meditating in front of your altar, should not be paisley. Okay? It should be a solid color. I'm telling you, it's a great meditation tip. Okay? If you decide to do this thing, then make sure there's also no magazines, no written material. Your eye will catch it and it will bring you out of meditation. But I suggest you try it. Okay? You can also, instead of focusing on this plane, sometimes, if you like, you can bring your mind to the Ajna chakra here and bring the eyes up also. So that would look like this. Okay? And you're not stretching the muscles. You're not straining the muscles. It's not like you're going. Okay? But you're loosely, you're looking up. That can be very powerful. Try it sometime. Okay? I'll give you a clue for that. Okay? From many years of experience. Don't stare at this as if someone has painted a dot on your forehead. Go in like half an inch. Focus on a spot which is half an inch into the skull and into the brain. Okay? Don't focus on the skin. Focus in about half an inch. And the concentration will be very intense. You'll find, and you can leave your eyes down and focus there also. Okay? But I find it helps sometimes to focus on that spot. Okay? Try it sometimes. You can impress your friends. You look like a Halloween, thing. Okay. All right. Miksam adem deta minungshan dupta shen la wamborap chuku tatang mik namka la tawa sok sumba yokyang rang lugla deta mija. He says there are other traditions in Tibet that recommend going like this. And he says, we don't do that. All right. Okay, we're on to the next one, which is what? Let's try to finish these and then we can take a break. Do you have a clock, anybody? You don't care? You want me to go to 11? I think you better bring me a clock. Okay. What's the next thing? Shoulders. Your shoulders, okay? When I was first teaching Lama Christy to meditate, it was very cute because she'd go like this. Some people, when they concentrate, I do that. This shoulder's always tense. As I go through the day, this shoulder's always higher. All my ballet teachers, thank you, and yoga teachers comment on it. Get the right shoulder down. Some people, when they concentrate, it's just a natural thing. And when they're concentrating in yoga, they do the same thing. And when they concentrate in ballet, they do the same. So work on bringing your shoulders back. What are they called in the Anusara? The tops of these bones. What are these? I don't know. They're back. The what do you call this? Scapula in the back? Shoulder blades are pressing towards each other and your chest is puffing out. Okay? That's easier if you're going to do chin mudra, slide it back on the thighs towards your torso and don't go over the knees. Okay? Bring it back and puff out your chest and bring your shoulder blades together a little bit and you can stay for a lot longer. Okay? So he says, be careful with the alignment of the shoulders. Don't let one shoulder get higher, and don't let them scrunch. Okay? Open up the chest. John Frenz, I saw him teach in Hong Kong, and his demonstrator was that lady from Chandler. What's her name? I forget. Desiree. Who's like one of his best teachers, I heard. I don't know for sure. But he really hassled her. He really embarrassed her in front of everybody, but I guess that's just, I don't know. That's what lamas do. But he was kept pushing her, the middle of her, between her shoulder blades, and kept telling her to drop it out, you know, bring it out. And that's helpful. That's really helpful in meditation, okay? The shoulder should be on a level. And that completes the how many? Seven. That's 7 points of the posture, okay? Somebody's got six. You're probably counting the shoulders separately, or I don't know. Here's a very important point in this book, okay? Here's a very important point in this book. He says, all of these posture suggestions are extremely important for advanced tantric practice. Okay, Dzogrim. For second stage tantric practice, all of these suggestions are crucial. Okay? Kyang means what? But, Dir Shedu Mirung, it would be inappropriate to describe them to a general audience. Okay? He's making a statement about Tantra. Okay? You don't talk about inner body stuff in Tibet. You don't talk about inner body stuff to an audience who hasn't been trained in it, okay? Or they might think something bad. They might think something wrong, okay? Because they don't understand it. So it's a tradition in the Lam Rim teachings that you don't speak about these things to a public, to a general audience, okay? The people should have some training first, okay? Before you talk a lot about inner body. Someone with an honest interest in yoga, who's already attracted to yoga, I believe they're already appropriate. It's already appropriate to talk about it with them because they're already further along in the inner body than most Tibetan monks ever get. Okay? Someone who's really interested in yoga and alignment and inner body stuff, I think it's appropriate to talk to them about Dzogrim in a general way. Okay? Because they already are interested in prana and they're already experiencing stuff with their prana. And they don't understand it fully. So, okay. Shedumirum. Lunen di shindu gel chewayin. These are very important points about posture. How you hold your body is crucial for your meditation. Okay. Lodag marpe. Who's Lodag marpa? That's marpa. That's his full name. Okay. Marpa's full name is Lodag marpa. Lotawa. He was the student of, teacher of, and he was the student of Naropa, okay? He was a beer-guzzling businessman from South Tibet, a rather prosperous farmer, who got it into his head to go to India and learn yoga, okay, and Tantra. God knows why. But then he taught Milarepa. And that's a long story. We did some of that, right? At Diamond Mountain. People had 7 years of the best education in the higher scriptures that anyone on this planet has ever had. 20,000 pages of translation in the last 7 years at Diamond Mountain. Okay, and we did Marpa's philosophy. We did a lot of his philosophy. Okay. Anyway, Pukki Gom Tamche Dom Kyang Nga Marpa Lotsai Duluk Chipula Mito. So here's something that Marpa said. If you took all of the meditation instructions given by all the Tibetan meditators nowadays in our country, nowadays meaning what? 1026 or something like that, okay? It wouldn't be equal to my meditation posture. All the tantric instructions being given by meditators in southern Tibet in nowadays ain't worth how I sit, how I hold my body in meditation. It's more important to have your body in good alignment than to know a bunch of stuff about prana and all that. Got it? The way I sit is better than all the way those people talk. How's that? Chipu midoshe sumbatare. Namnangshe sumbane. Now he's going on to another subject, okay? Then I'll give you a break, okay? In about, I don't know, within the next couple hours. Why do we attribute this meditation posture to Vairochana? There's a Buddha named Vairochana. He's one of the five Buddha families in the secret teachings, okay? So Namnang in Tibetan, or Vairochana in Sanskrit, is one of the five Buddha families. So why do we attribute this meditation posture to that particular Buddha? Sangye Namba Nangze De Supu Namba Dape Takcha Tar Shawa Yimbe De Chane Sumbayin. This is cool, okay? I'm going off on a tangent because it's my pleasure to do so. I have to dumb down courses all year, and in this course I get to dumb it up, smart it up. There are five Buddha families in the secret teachings. They are very important. Many of your vows come from the five Buddha families. In the secret teachings, many of your vows come from these five families. Why are there five Buddha families? In the most ancient teachings of Buddhism, there are five parts of a human being. The human being has five parts. They are called skanda in Sanskrit, or heaps in English, or piles. Pungdan kejo riki go, pungdan kejo riki go, pumbo keje kamnayin. This is first chapter Abhidharma Kosha. I memorized most of the Abhidharma Kosha, and I have successfully forgotten almost everything. But I remember this line. Pungdan kejo riki go, pumbo keje kamnayin. Why do they call them heaps? Why do they, don't they just call them the five parts of your body and mind? Why do they call them the five piles or the five heaps? Skanda. And then the Abhidharma Kosha says, written by Master Vasubandhu in 350 AD, he said, it's because each of them has many of its own components. Okay? Each of the five heaps has many components of its own. Let's talk about what they are, because this is one of the most important teachings of Buddhism. We could say the mind-body, what do you call it? Combination, but we don't. We say five heaps. Instead of saying the combination of mind and body is you, we say you are five piles of stuff. What are they? Say sukh. What do you call it? Shou shang xing xi, yi fu lu shi. Right? Something like that. Sa bui kong kong bui sa. Sa ji shi kong kong ji shi sha. Shou shang xing xi. Sa shou shang xing xi. The five heaps in Chinese, okay? First one is su, means your physical body is the first part of you. It has lots of components because you have a nose and you have ear, you know, two ears, and okay? Second one is what? Feelings. I feel good. I feel bad. Okay. The capacity of feeling is the second of the five heaps. Third one is dushi. Shang. It means the ability to discriminate between things. This is tall. This is short. This is long. This is short. This is hot. This is cold. I like him. I don't like her. Okay? That's the third of the five pieces of a human being. What's the fourth one? Duce. Duce is defined in the Abhidharma as Duce Pumbo Shile Shen, means all the other stuff. Okay? That's the best they could do. You could call it stuff. Osiris, right? His name belongs in the fourth one. You see, Michael is in the fourth. Michael is an idea, and Michael is a name. And it's neither my body or my mind. It's something that is said to the body and mind together. Osiris. So that stays in part number four. Four means all the other stuff. Five is what? Your awareness, your general awareness, okay? If somebody punches you real hard and you fall down on the, what do you call it? The floor of the boxing ring, your fifth heap is a little bit not working just right, okay? And frankly, you don't appreciate the miracle of your fifth heap, okay? You are aware. You can be happy, you can be sad, you can be, people be happy with you, people are criticizing you, you feel good, you feel bad. Those are all like secondary. You're aware, thank God, you know? Like you can see stuff, and you can hear stuff, and you can think stuff. And that's all part number five, okay? That's all part number five. Your awareness of the world is a miracle. And you have it all day, and you don't appreciate it, okay? Autistic people lose a bit of that. You see what I mean? Deaf people, blind people. But you have it. You have all of it, right? It's very beautiful. People with Alzheimer's lose part of it, okay? It's a karma. It's a result of karma. You can lose it, right? It gets old. Anyway, these are the five parts of a person. Yes? Sukh. Sorwa, Duche, Duche, and Namche. What's that? Rupa, Vedana. I don't remember the other one. Sanskara? San. What is it? I don't think so. Anyway, Vedana, Duche. It must be sansnya, you're right, yeah, sansnya, then sanskara, then vijnana, okay? These are the five, okay? Why did I bring that up? We were talking about why we call these eight parts of meditation posture vairochana, okay? So each of the five dhyani buddhas, or each of the five buddha families in the secret teachings, they relate to one of the five heaps, okay? And get this, they represent the purification of one of the five heaps, okay? When your body goes from mortal to immortal, you have done the vairochana thing. When your physical body goes from flesh and blood to light, you are vairochana. That part of you is vairochana. The eventual purification of your physical body is vairochana. Okay? Got it? So why would that be the name chosen for a meditation posture? It means your physical body is in its best position. Okay? You're almost purifying your physical body. Okay? How do you go from a mortal body to a light body? It has to do with your chakras, okay? It has to do with your chakras. That's a long story. You have knots in your body. And around those knots in the womb forms bone. The skull forms around two of the chakras. The C7, the major bones of the upper back, form around the throat chakra. The ribs form around the heart chakra. And then Manipura, the lower part of the spine. Svadhisthana chakra, the large bones of the pelvis, hips. And then, what's that last one called? Muladhara. That also contributes to the hip bone, which is the largest bone in the body, heaviest bone in the body. So these are the bones themselves are created because of knots in your channels. Then flesh and blood form around those. And you are born out of your mother's womb as a mortal being, which must die, which must get old. The only way to escape that is to untie the chakras, is to untie the channels. So yoga in Tibet is considered a very high practice because it's a direct attempt to untie the knots. And if you're trained in yoga properly, it could contribute to your body changing, okay? It's very beautiful. Yoga is very important for Buddhists, okay? All right. And you're lucky if you're attracted to it from the beginning. You know what I mean? I wasn't. I had to work on it. But if you're like someone who's always been attracted to that stuff, you're lucky. We would consider you advanced. Unexpectedly advanced. Okay? Unaware, advanced. Okay. But then it's easier to pick up the other stuff. Okay. Okay. So anyway, now you understand why it's called Vairochana. Aren't you going to ask me what's the purification of the other four heaps? No, but I'm going to tell you anyway. And then we'll stop. We'll take a break. Sorpung number thakpa. Okay. The purification of your feelings, where they become perfect equanimity and compassion towards all beings, right? That's expressed as a yellow Buddha whose body is... by the way, Vairochana is white because he combines all other colors. Okay? Or she. He or she. There's Lady Vairochana also. Anyway, Ratnakara, Rinchen Jungne, Ratnakara is the purification of your feelings. Okay? The purification of your discrimination is Upagme. Upagme. Somebody got refuge today and her name is Ugyal. Means light. The Sanskrit is Baha. It came into Greek as fall, photon, or photography. The PHO came from the Sanskrit BHA. So anyway, Amitabha, limitless light, is the purification of your capacity of discrimination. And that's red. That's a crimson color. Then Dujeki Pumbo is, what is that? Dunya Drupa, okay. Amoga Siddhi, which is a green color. And then the purification of your consciousness or your awareness is Akshobhya or Mikyupa, and that's blue, okay? So that's why, anyway, that's a very long reason why they're called the meditation posture of Vairochana. Now you know the whole family. Okay, now you're familiar with the whole family, the all five. There are specific vows to each of the five. Okay, and when you get the advanced teachings, you will learn those vows. Okay, one of them has to do with the requirement to have a spiritual partner. Okay, one of them has to do with the requirement to have a spiritual partner. You are required by your vows of the five families to have a spiritual partner, whether it's imaginary or physical. You are required, okay? So, anyway, I'm just saying that. All right, let's take a break. And Mira, could I meet your guy's friend? Okay, all right, okay. Have a nice break, maybe 10 minutes? Okay. Done it, but if not, it should be ready. It should be ready. Okay, hello. Okay. Tonight we are auditioning for the band. All of the people in the audience are auditioning for the band. And you have to sing a test song for Lama Ora. Okay, one, two, three. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Ora. So we are allowed to pass it out during the teaching, okay? It's important. All right. Okay, here we go. So now he's going to start talking about the eighth of the eight-part postures. What is that? The breath. Okay, he's going to make some nice... Again, this is the only place, this is the best explanation you'll get about this in your life. So pay attention. You won't find this in the textbooks from the monastery, for example. Okay, here we go. Tsosem mi gewa don sunden de son dugna gesem kepa chen sel tep kawa. Oh boy, you're in trouble. Let me see. Say tsungden.
Tsungden.
This is a concept from the Abhidharma, okay? This is an ancient concept called Tsungden. It describes the relationship between your main consciousness and your thoughts. For example, if you have anger or jealousy or compassion or love or discrimination or feelings, those are not main mind. Those are aspects of the mind. Those are functions, sub-functions of the mind, okay? Emotions. But while you're having emotions, you have general awareness, okay? You're not, your mind didn't go black. Mike Tyson didn't hit you in the head, okay? You are aware. And linked to that awareness are your emotions, love, compassion, logic, wisdom, okay? Jealousy. There's a very beautiful and detailed teaching in the Abhidharma about the nature of that link between the main mind and the aspects of the mind or the functions of the mind, okay? That link is called Tsungden. And you need to know it for this discussion of breath meditation. To understand breath meditation, you must understand how your awareness is linked to your emotions. Okay? And Tsungden means, in the Abhidharma Kosha, it's a special teaching, which we can do someday in our spare time. There are five ways in which the main mind, or your general awareness, is linked to your thoughts. There are five ways, okay? And I'm going to give them to you, just because it will slow everything down. Say ten. They go like this in Tibet. Ten. Mikpa. Namba. Two. Ze. Ten. Mikpa. Namba. Two. Ze. Ten means, how should we say? Let's give an example that I'm looking at this postcard because I want work study. And I understand that I have to apply tonight or forever shut up. Okay? So I am looking at the postcard. My main awareness in my mind is aware of the postcard. And also I have feelings about the postcard. I like Milo's... You did this one, right? I like the job he did. So there's an emotion which is linked to the general awareness of the postcard. Okay? Through the same ten. Link number one is called the same basis. Meaning, both my primary state awareness and my appreciation of the quality of the artistry, they are both resting upon the consciousness of my eye, upon my visual consciousness, okay? My awareness of shape and color, okay? I have a capacity to see. And both my awareness and my appreciation are resting upon that in the way that Kleenex rests upon the table. Got it? So they are linked according to their foundation, which is the sense consciousness that I'm using at the time. Got it? Clear? Not so clear. Both of those states of mind are resting upon my capacity to see. Okay? That's number one, link number one. Link number two, mikpa, say mikpa. The mikpa is the object of my consciousness. In this case, the postcard. Okay? The postcard. That is shared by my main awareness and by my appreciation. They are both looking at the same postcard. Got it? My general awareness and my appreciation are both looking at the same postcard. So they are linked in a second way, which is called object of perception. Okay? Got it? So far we have foundation, sense consciousness, and then we have, they are linked through being on the same object of perception, the outside postcard. Okay? Say number. Number is really difficult. You see, I studied Abhidharma for 10 years with Rinpoche, and we translated one of the greatest commentaries together. And this is a particularly difficult idea. Namba means the coloration of the mind. Okay? And the general coloration of the mind. That's difficult to describe. In the Yoga Sutra, they talk about a white crystal put next to a blue crystal, and the blue crystal will cause the white crystal to have a blue shade to it. So they're both shaded in the same way. For example, it might be a shading of feeling good. Okay? My main consciousness is somehow shaded happy or postcardish. And my, how should we say? Let's change that. When I look at a postcard, both my appreciation and my awareness have a postcardish quality to them. They're content of the invisible mind, right? Not the content of the object, but the content of the state of mind. It's like crystal, which is colored blue or red, due to proximity of another object. Okay? Like that. Both my general awareness and my appreciation are imbued with an awareness of postcardness. The quality of being a postcard imbues my state of mind like a color of a rose next to a diamond or a crystal. You see what I mean? Colors it red. The same coloring, okay? And that you gotta work on, okay? It took me many years to even get that far, and it's not very clear, is it? Okay. Okay, dunyam. Dunyam is easy, number four. They are simultaneous. They are happening at the same time. My awareness of color and shape and my appreciation of Milo's artistry and of birthday cake are happening at the same time. They are simultaneous, okay? They're going on at the same time. So they are linked temporally by time. Okay, got it? Number five. I say Jay. Jay means the stuff of both of them is the same. The stuff of general awareness, the material that you use to make it, and the material that you use to make appreciation is consciousness, mental stuff. So they share a substance, which is not really substance, okay? They share the quality of being mental. They are both mental. What would be not matching? It would be one of them is physical and one of them is mental. But in this case, the raw material of both the awareness and the appreciation is mental. Mentalness. They're both mental. So anyway, in these five ways, your feelings, your emotions, your other mental functions are linked to your general awareness of the world. Okay, got it? Let's go back to breath meditation. Why is that relevant? Let's hope it is. If your general awareness is linked in those five ways to a negative state of mind, to a non-virtuous state of mind, okay? like you're angry at somebody. That would be main mind, main awareness is tainted by anger, okay? Because it's linked to it, okay? And the anger is coloring the consciousness, okay? Then it would be difficult to enter a meditation where you were focusing on a virtuous object, such as your own personal teacher in the golden room. Okay? If you're angry and you sit down, basically what he's saying is, if you're angry and you sit down to meditate, you will not be able to turn the mind to a virtuous object quickly. It'll be a struggle. Because you're not only trying to focus on your teacher's form, you are struggling against your feelings of unkindness. Okay? And you won't be able to meditate. It will ruin the meditation. It's like, and I always tell the same story, but, you know, Ningbo told me, Geshe-la, you shouldn't tell the same story 28 times in one city on a DCI tour. But anyway, I'm going to tell you again. Is everybody getting cake? Otherwise, I feel bad. You got to hand it out to everybody. Okay. I'll tell you another distracting story. In the monastery of, in our monastery, 1,300 monks when I was there, the abbot must get the first cup of tea. He's up there teaching, and he has to get the first cup of tea. Then slowly, 1,300 other monks get their cup of tea. But the abbot cannot drink his until they do a prayer. So his is always ice cold and covered with butter, spoiled butter. What do you call it? Scum? And the youngest monk, who's about 7 years old, is the only one who gets a hot cup of tea. Anyway, what was the other distracting thing? Oh, yeah. So I was in, I told you this story already, but I think I was in Michigan with my mom and my brothers, and we had a fight in the car, and she was on the highway, and my brother hit the gear shift knob, and it went from forward to reverse at 50 miles an hour. And there was this, and everything smoked, and it ruined the car, okay? Meditation is the same, okay? If your mind is linked in the five ways to unhappy thoughts, you cannot sit down and immediately try to have a good meditation. It will never happen, okay? Got it? That's where we are. What's he gonna say? What's he gonna say? Therefore, you should count your breath for a while, because that brings the mind to neutral. Okay, the car stops. Then you can change it to reverse. Okay, like that. Okay, here we go. Sam Kepa Chen Sel Tepkana Perna, for example, Kondo Drapo Lang Shinbe Kap. When you are very angry or upset, Ma San Chen Tam Je Che Sam Ke Sel Dep Kul Che Kyang. You can sit down and do the prayer with Venerable Phil singing. Then you're supposed to be feeling universal love. It's a bodhicitta prayer, right? And you're upset, you know. Somebody just bothered you, you know, did some mean thing to you. And kul che means you can pretend to do the prayer with Venerable Phil, but we all know what. You're just upset the whole time, okay? Choktsam Yang Selmdet Minipa. You can't even get a glimpse of universal love when you're upset. Even if Venerable Phil is singing the universal love prayer. Got it? Okay. Selmdet Minipa Tare. De na semige dan sundendu son dugna. Therefore, if you find that your mind is linked to an unhappy or non-virtuous thought, right, in the five ways. Song Duna Reshi Gesem Seldat Michawar. Don't try to shift the car into forward from reverse. Go to neutral first. Go to neutral first, okay? Lungmaten, say Lungmaten. Very, very, very important idea in Buddhism. Say Lungmaten. Buddha was asked 14 questions in his lifetime which he refused to answer. Okay? Lung means to speak. Den means to demonstrate or to show. Lung Denba means to give a reply to a question. He was approached. It's happened to me this week a lot. I'm not being mean. I'm just saying it's happened to me this week that people approached me with questions which were inappropriate. And I couldn't say yes and I couldn't say no. You see what I mean? And Lord Buddha had 14 questions like that. For example, one of them is, does the world have a beginning or an end? He could have given an answer, but the audience wouldn't have understood it. So he declined. He said, no comment. That's called Lungmaten. Okay? In Tibetan, it's called Lungmaten. There are 14 famous questions. That would be an interesting class one day, right, to cover them. It'd be a really interesting class. Anyway, Lungmaten came to mean more generally neutral, or a neutral state of mind. So in the study of karma, we say there's bad karma, and there's good karma, and there's Lungmaten, means neutral. Picking your nose in your own room is Lungmaten. Okay? All right? Somebody else's house, if it's gooey, it might be a bad karma. Okay? Like that, okay? Certain actions are just not karmically charged. They are neither negative nor positive. They're just kind of, you're just doing it. Okay? All right. If you have any other examples, you can let me know. So it's important to bring the mind into neutral before you meditate, because you might have been upset up to that moment. Okay. Dene ge sem sugyur dewa. Then it would be easier to shift to a virtuous state of mind. So first do your breath meditation. Okay. Perna nambu karpo yinkyang chi me napo chepala tsunlenka. Nambu means a bolt of cloth, okay, a bolt of white cloth, karpo, in Tibet. If it's already stained, like with a butter stain or something, it won't take a dye very well, okay? You cannot dye it uniformly red or uniformly blue, because if it has a stain, it won't take the color very well. Okay? Shing. De chula lepar chun. So first you would have to wash the stains out of it, right? Then you would have to dye it red or whatever other color you wanted. Okay? What's he talking about? Your own mind. Your own state of mind. Don't sit down after being on the internet and getting all this, you know, and then sit down and try to meditate. It's not going to work, okay? First, bring the mind to neutral. Watch your breath for a while, okay? Watch your breath for a while, okay? Don't try to dye a stained piece of cloth red. Wash it first to neutral color and then dye it, okay? So, Sogyurkyang Lavatayan. Deyang Sem Lungmaten Shepa. What do we mean when we say Lungmaten? Gewa dami gewa kandiyama soma. It's a neutral state of mind. It's neither virtuous nor non-virtuous. Nambu karpa chima mepa tabu laseroyin. It's like a neutral state of mind is comparable to the white cloth after the stains have been removed. Got it? Okay. Now it's ready to dye. D-Y-E. De na ujang ne sem lungmaten tu gyur luk jita yin nyamta. So how is it, there's a rhetorical question in the text, how is it that you bring the mind to a neutral state by watching your breath? Okay. Lo ka nandu chok ne kunong la takpe dercha ta shedan soki wong du song dugna. Now he's telling you how to do it in real practice. Lo kan nang du chok means bring your mind inside. bring your mind to, what do they call that, introspective. Look to the inside with your mind. Stop looking at the cake. And bring the mind inside. Check your motivation. Why are you meditating? Why did you sit down to meditate today? If you find that your mind has slipped into disliking something strongly or liking something strongly in a wrong way, right? But we all know what that means. Check the sound of your breath passing through your nostrils. Okay? Dachen. Is it making a whizzing? The wind to the trees. Wheezing sound? Whistling. Whistling. Like a swipe. They say if you're a good meditator, you get distracted by the sound of the breath moving through the hairs in your nose. It will start to sound like a helicopter or something. If your meditation is good, you will be compelled to slow down your breath so you don't have to listen to the infernal whistling. It sounds like a teapot when it's going off. You see? So, shuk chen dung means, or if your breath is too strong. Or kupak chen, if your breath is ragged. Okay? Like you were doing John Salisbury's class, and and your breath is, you know. That's how mine was today. Gumshin sama dabu. Dabu chi tong shin par song on yamba che. In that case, you should start to watch your breath, okay? Bring your awareness to your breath. And he says, oh, look, it's going out. Oh, look, it's coming in. Okay? All right? If you find your breath is off, stop and examine your breath, okay? So I want to put a side editorial comment in here. Anytime your breath gets out of whack, you are in danger of having a negative emotion. Okay? Anytime. And you can detect that you are about to get upset when your breath falls out of whack. You know, when your breath gets ragged, or you start breathing faster, or the exhales are too short, and the inhales are very long. Okay, then you're about to have a mental affliction attack. And you better stop, because you're about to make some bad karma. Okay, so you should gain an awareness. Also, when you're doing yoga, I mean, I found it very helpful to listen to your breath as if you were somebody else standing next to you. And how smooth does it sound? And it's kind of depressing. Okay, now you're like, you know, and then then you can bring it down. Then you can control your breath, okay? But become capable of standing away from yourself as you do yoga and listen to yourself breathe. Which John said today you can't do if the music is pumping, right? So sometimes turn off the music, but not too often. Okay. As it goes out, think, oh, look, it's going out. As it comes in, think, oh, look, it's coming in. Okay? Oh, so I really wanted to emphasize, and it's on your homework. You know, they say count to 10 when you're angry or something like that, right? So watch your breath, okay? If your breath gets out of whack, stop whatever you're doing and do 10 good breaths. Do 10 good breaths, and you will save so much suffering in your life. You'll have so many fewer fights with people, or so many less food. What do they call that? When you have a food attack? What do you call that? Craving. Yeah, I mean, you're nervous, and you go to the fridge, and you open it up, and watch your breath, and it'll be... And you're just eating because you're nervous. You're not hungry. Check your stomach at that moment. You're like, I'm not hungry. I just ate like half an hour ago. And then close the fridge and breathe. Watch your breath. It's a very powerful practice, okay? Bring the breath to neutral. Okay? Anytime you find your breath off, stop. Also during a yoga session, right? If you can. Okay. Where were we? Delen chik song yam pache. Then you think, oh, look, that's one complete breath. Okay? He started with the exhale, and then he went to the inhale. And that's an important spiritual practice in India and Tibet, all traditions. A breath is not this. Like when you're swimming or something. The breath isn't an inhale and an exhale. A breath is one exhale followed by one inhale. And that's a breath, okay? It's very important in Tantra. It's very, very important. If the last part of the breath were the exhale, that's a death. That's what people do when they die. They breathe out and they don't breathe in, okay? In our tradition, you always count a breath from the exhale to the inhale. And that's considered laya. There will be a, what do you call it? All of the universe will contract to your heart and you get enlightened or something like that. It's never like this. The last moment of enlightenment is always like, okay, like that, okay? So you always count a breath from the exhale first and then go to the inhale. Okay, you got to practice that. It's not too natural. Then start counting your breaths. Go from 2 to 7 to gu, 9 to chuchik, to 11 to chonga, to 15 to nerchik, 21. You can choose your own. Yeah, you can choose your own number. I prefer 30, personally. I never count to 10, frankly. I teach you guys, but I don't do it that way. I use 30. It takes me 30 breaths to calm my breath down. Okay? You can do 10. He says you could do 9. You could do 11, 15, whatever you want. Dung ten la mi dungwa. Don't use your rosary. Don't say, oh, breath number one, breath number two, right? This is a practice. I mean, this custom of breath meditation is very old. It's called Ukchungup, right? In the Abhidharma. What happened historically is that there are five great subjects of Buddhism, and only two of them got out of southern India to Sri Lanka or Thailand or Burma, okay? They never got the other three. All they got was Vinaya and Abhidharma. So if you go to Thailand or you go to Sri Lanka, or Vipassana, right, which is a corruption of the word Vipassana, that's a Burmese custom. All the instructions they ever got was the breath meditation, which was only a warm-up. And then because it was the only book that ever got there, they did it for, you know, 1,000 years. Just watch their breath, okay? In our tradition, that's considered, that's like buying a, how do you say? The object towards which you're focused is not virtuous. It's not morally charged. It's neutral. The breath is neutral. If you watch your breath for year after year, the mind will become neutral, but not kind or compassionate, you see? You should choose an object which would induce kindness or love or knowledge in your heart. But just watching your breath is not going to do that. It's only a warm-up. It wasn't the final act, okay? Okay, so here we go. Sem ma yengbar dengbe. Don't let yourself get distracted. Count. Don't count your breaths on your rosary, okay? Because you can't do two things at once. Okay? And that's what he says next. So ke lo chikit zindang nilan jugmin nu. Okay? I'm gonna say it again. It's important. So ke lo chiki zindang nila jugmin nu. This is a very important subject for those of you studying Munsao. Daedun Yuki Munsao, right? If you're studying with Ningbo, Buddhist logic and Buddhist thinking, it's a very important subject. In the, what's the root text for that? I'll eat cake. You will wonder what's the root text. What's the root text for the study of all logic and perceptual theory in Pramana Vartika? Say Pramana Vartika. Sanskrit doesn't have a V. It's a W. You are studying Pramana Vartika. Okay? Written by Master Dharmakirti. There's a very, very famous line in the Pramana Vartika. It said, say, okay? Chiki Nishe Mayinte. Chiki Nishe Mayinte. Very famous line from the Pramana Vartika. Okay? What's that say? One can't do two. One cannot do two. Okay? What's he talking about? A normal human being's mind cannot hold two objects at once. It's not possible. Okay? So any time in the monastery, and I grew up, right, 25 years with Ken Rinpoche, if I was trying to do too many things at once, he would say, Chiki Nishi Mayente, Chiki Nishi Mayente. You can't, your mind cannot do two things at once. You can toggle between the two, and it appears that you're doing both, but you're not. Okay? You're just wrecking your mental power. You're messing around with your head. Okay? Don't try to do two things at once. Get in the habit of doing things well and with all your concentration. Okay? And don't try to juggle things. Okay? It's a kind of samadhi. It's a kind of healthy state of mind. Okay? You don't have to juggle three things. Do them one by one. Finish the first one, then do the second one, then do the third one. Don't try to eat cake while you're teaching a class. Like, wait until the class is over and eat the cake, because chiki ni mayinte, okay? But it's a very helpful thing in your life. If you want to meditate well, learn to prioritize your life, okay? Don't try to do your Facebook while you're having lunch. Eat your lunch, turn off your computer, eat your lunch, concentrate on the taste. Then go sit somewhere and do Facebook, okay? But you are hurting your mind, and you are hurting your attention, your capacity of attention, if you try to do Facebook while you're eating, for example, okay? It's very bad for your mind, and you will not be able to meditate well, okay? And it's a disease that has spread through the whole modern world, you know. Everyone's trying to text while they're driving. It's so dangerous, you know. People are always swerving towards me, and I'm like, and then they're like on the phone or they're texting, and I'm like, damn, you know. I mean, how stupid do you have to be to text while you're driving, you know? And it's extremely dangerous. And it's okay if they just crash their own car. I don't mind. But they're like swerving into me, you know. Like, park your car and text, okay? The text will come out better if it's romantic or something. I mean, you can concentrate on it. But to try to text while it hurts your mind, and it hurts your capacity of attention, and it will hurt your meditation. Learn to do things one at a time. Focus. Get into it. Go deep into it. Go sweetly into it. Make it creative and deep and sexy, you know? And don't try to do three things at once, because then it all becomes shallow. And the whole internet is such a shallow thing. If you meditate well and you're living this kind of spiritual life, the whole internet is like people living in a half inch of ocean, at the top of the ocean. And there's 5,000 feet below that they never touch, you know. And it's a very sad thing. Focus. Learn to focus on one thing. If you're going to look at a flower, then look at a flower. Stop. Hold it in your hand. smell it, look at it, you know, and enjoy it. Learn to enjoy things. I saw the Dalai Lama eat dinner once. He was so into it. And he wasn't thinking about anything else. He was just eating. And I have a feeling he enjoyed dinner more than anybody. Because he has the capacity to focus on one thing. Okay? Anyway, Sokye means someone who has not yet seen emptiness directly. Lo chiki jintanyi la jumi nupa. You cannot focus on two things at once. Cannot do. What's the implication? If you have seen emptiness directly, you are able to focus on two things? I'm not sure. A Buddha can, for sure. Okay. I still don't think it's healthy. Unless you're a Buddha. Okay. Jintanyi la jumi nupa chak sok shine. First, deal with whatever emotions you're having at that moment. Okay? Don't sit down and try to meditate. If you're upset or you're thinking strongly about breakfast, how does Michael Roach define yoga? That thing which stands between me and breakfast. Okay? Get your mind off the breakfast. Get your mind off the emails. Get your mind off the latest on the internet. And watch your breath. And bring the mind to neutral. Then start meditating. Okay? Girong. By the way, there's a cute story here, and I'm going to push it a little bit to get to the story, because it's so cute. Okay? That's the treasure of the Lamrim, I think, the stories. It's like Jesus' parables or something. Okay? So anyway, nyomong nam u narpu namba dang, mupe tse gyawa se she ki jinab u karpa namba nang du shukpe mupe chawar sumbani. So he said, you do see teachings that tell you when you exhale, you should picture it as a black stream of air, and that you are exhaling all your negativity, negative emotions, okay? And when you inhale, you should imagine that you are breathing in white light, which is the blessings of all the bodies of the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, okay? Nangdu shukpe muparchawa. Doing that practice is not for regular meditation, and you don't need to do it. It's only for, here's a word you know, bogdun or bogjimba. Okay? So Lama Christie asked me, you know, what can I teach? I said, well, maybe you start teaching meditation. This is 2003 or something. I said, maybe it'd be nice if you start with meditation. What should I call my class? I said, well, we have many students who have been meditating poorly for many years. They got into a bad habit. Let's call the class Bokjimba, which means to upgrade your meditation. Okay? It means to, what do you call it? Bring it to a new level. Okay? So the Tibetan is either Bokjimba or Bokdumba. But doing that black cloud thing and the white cloud thing, he says, you don't have to do it. Don't worry. That's people just do that when they want to add extra effort to the thing, Bokjimba. But it's not for everybody. You should be doing it without the clouds. Okay? Just watch your breath. Don't picture something or make it more complicated. Okay? You don't have to do that. Here's the story, okay, and then we'll stop. We got 2 minutes. I'll try to say it faster. But I'm kind of stalling. Did you get cake? Okay. Daki Lama Rinpoche, my precious Lama, used to tell me, who's saying that? Prabhupada Rinpoche is saying that. He used to give an example of how it was easier to go into a virtuous state of mind from a neutral state of mind. He gave an example. He used to tell a story. Gundu, he told a pei. Pei means a metaphor. Gundu, it's winter. Nam Tang, Gang. Those of you who are learning Tibetan, that's a very rare word that means wind. S-G-A-N-G, Gang. Nam Tang Gang means when the weather was freezing outside. Chikla, Rangi Den Chikde Mepa. You only have one carpet. Okay. Carpet means in Tibet, each monk has a personal carpet. It's only this big. And when the weather's cold and you have to debate in the debate ground, you take your den. Okay? You have a dingwa, which is a thin piece of cloth that every monk is required to carry, that used to be a thick piece of cloth that you could sit on in India when it was wet and stuff like that. Nowadays, it's just a ceremonial thing that you drag around, like so many other things. But in a modern Tibetan monastery, a den is a piece of wool carpet that's woven about this big. So, okay, it's the dead of winter. You have your den, your one den, your one Tibetan carpet. For sitting, it's a sitting carpet, okay? Mepe tengdu, mishi de dukna. You walk out and somebody's sitting on it, on your carpet, okay? Longshade sentap su jitsam longyang milangna. You can yell, get off my carpet, but he's not going to move, because it's cold, okay? Longshade mi jipar. So it would be smarter not to say, please get off my carpet, all right? Part thamna, demo chembo shi duche jupa. Rather, you should walk up to him and say, you can't believe what's going on behind the house. Okay? He's like, what? Nina, nang tawa do kuchina. I'm sorry, I gotta go. You know, and you head off towards the back of the house, okay? Then you hide. Okay? Dokuchina, Koyang Langna. Then he leaps up to see what's happening behind the house, right? And he passes you. Then you jump on the carpet and you sit on it, okay? So trick your own mind. Trick your own mind into neutral, okay? Oh, wait till you see this breath I'm having, you know? I know you're upset about the newspaper or something, but there's some wild breath going on here, you know? Okay? All right. Utsu chekyang gokar. Don't fight with your mind. That's an important meditation instruction. Don't go head to head. If your mind is upset or worried about some stuff going on, don't go head to head with it. Don't try to fight it down. You won't be able. Distract your mind. Distract your mind. Let's count breaths. Okay? Okay? All right? Ukdo ong semla tena dela gokorne. Gokorne, those of you who are learning Tibetan, gokor is an important word. Can you see it up there somewhere? It's at the end of a line somewhere. You want to put the cursor there, Ningbo? Yeah, gokor. Go means what? The head. Kor means to spin it. Gokor means to trick somebody, to spin their head. In Tibetan, gokor, not gokor tanchung, he's tricked me. Okay? So, gokor ne, you should trick your upset state of mind. Okay? And say, let's count breath. Let's look at the breath. Okay? Nyomong ko shine, gesem samdap dewa yino. And it will be much easier to go to forward from reverse, out of neutral. Then you'll be able to get a virtuous state of mind. Okay? And we'll stop there. All right? So he's describing, we just described the benefit of breath meditation. It is not a goal. It is a means. It is not an end. It's a means. Okay? You use it until the mind gets into neutral, and then you switch to your meditation object. Okay? Breathing is not a virtuous object, necessarily. Okay? You switch to some high object, like your own personal teacher's face, or compassion, or kindness, or something good, okay? Don't just sit and watch your breath all day. It doesn't help you, okay? It doesn't get you anywhere. It calms you down, but it doesn't cause your mind and your heart to progress, okay? Okay, and since we praised Venerable Phil, we better. Yeah. Okay, see you tomorrow. Please take a homework, okay? This tradition has gone on for 2,500 years. It has been passed down from generation to generation. I will only teach it once. You must pass it on. You can't do so responsibly unless you do the homework, okay? So work with your groups, do your homeworks, okay? It's not for me. It's a lot of hassle. Okay, but we need to pass this on purely. Okay, okay, deal, mazal. Okay, mazal, ubrachah.